Producers and creators are the sources of all value on the planet. MC Lobster, the host of the top-rated business and investing podcast Cashflow Ninja, is on a mission with Producers Wealth to help producers create, protect, and multiply their wealth outside of Wall Street in any economy by creating systems and processes that help them increase their production, provides them with liquidity, passive income generators, and opportunities for enormous growth. Learn more about their time-tested and proven systems at yourownbankingsystem.com. That's yourownbankingsystem.com.
Welcome to the Cashflow Ninja, the podcast sharing how to create income streams and manage, multiply, and protect your wealth in the new economy. Here is your host, Inside the Dojo, MC Laubscher.
Hello, Cashflow Ninjas. MC Lobster here, and welcome to another episode of the Cashflow Ninja. I have a great show for you today. And in today's show, we're going to look at the 80-20 principle and concept with relation to sales and marketing, and talk about how to work less and make more money. I'm joined today by one of the masters in sales and marketing. He's had a very big influence on my career personally, Perry Marshall. Perry Marshall is one of the most influential people in sales and marketing. Perry is endorsed in Forbes and Inc. magazine and is one of the most expensive business consultants in the world. Clients seek his ability to integrate technology, sales, art, and psychology. He founded the $5 million Evolution 2.0 Prize with judges from Harvard, Oxford, and MIT. The prize aims to solve the biggest mystery in biology. Harvard Business Review featured his 80-20 curve, a productivity tool used by NASA's Jet Propulsion Labs at the California Institute of Technology. 80-20 sales and marketing is mandatory in many growing companies. Marketing maverick Dan Kennedy says, if you don't know who Perry Marshall is, unforgivable. Perry is an honest man in a field rife with charlatans. His Google AdWords book laid the foundations for the $100 billion pay-per-click industry, and techniques he pioneered are standard best practices. Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords is the world's best-selling book on internet advertising. Perry's consulted in over 300 industries and served as an expert witness for marketing and Google AdWords litigation. Perry has a degree in electrical engineering and lives in Chicago.
Are you an investor looking for passive cash flow but don't have the time to explore your options? Discover Real Estate. It's the best option for passive income that savvy investors have been turning to for years to generate income and build wealth. But the reality is, real estate investing takes expertise, market knowledge, and time. So what do you do if you don't have the time or market knowledge? Discover how many business investors have found a way to generate cash flow from real estate investing. Their secret? They partner with proven private real estate investment funds. Four Peaks Capital Partners have created a system that allows accredited investors the opportunity to invest in undervalued assets to generate passive income and capital gains. Invest with the cash flow experts and sit back while Four Peaks does all the work. Call Four Peaks Capital Partners at 877-5-INCOME. That's 877-5-INCOME, or go to privateincomeinvesting.com. An offer to buy or sell securities is only made by a private placement memorandum. Prospective investors must read the PPM in its entirety before making an investment decision.
Barry, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here, and we're going to go down some interesting rabbit trails today. So I'm looking forward to riffing with you about leverage and real estate and everything. Yes.
Same here. I've been a very big fan. And as I mentioned, love one of the quotes that you have on sales and in marketing, how no one ever walked into a hardware store to buy a drill because they wanted a drill. They wanted a hole. So
yes,
I've applied that thinking and strategy in all of my marketing and my sales.
Well, and therefore you should advertise information about making holes, not about drills, which really moves you to a whole different level of conversation with anything. I mean, that little, you know, nobody wanted a drill, they wanted a hole, that really kind of is the essence of thinking about marketing at a higher level. And, you know, when I first encountered that idea, and in fact, I didn't coin that phrase. I stole it from somebody else, but I seem to have gotten a little bit famous for it. But when I was wrapping my head around that, you know, maybe 20 years ago, that really was kind of a radical idea, I think, for a lot of people. And really, you know, if you're going to be a good marketer, you have to be able to look at things at kind of an abstract level like that. You have to stand back and kind of ask yourself questions that are really riddles. And you also have to be able to think backwards, you know. And what I mean by that is when you're trying to sell anything, you have all your reasons for why you're selling it, and you have all the reasons why you think it's better. And very often you may have gone far, far, far deeper into whatever it is than any of your customers ever will. And you understand it way better, but you still have to twist your head around 180 degrees. It's like, okay, I'm not on my mobile phone. I'm in their mobile phone. I'm not sitting in front of their computer. I'm sitting in front of theirs. And I don't have my problems. I have their problems. And, you know, like I was thinking about children's TV commercials this morning when I was getting a drink of water. And I think it was because of something I saw in my refrigerator that's marketed at children. And I thought, well, you know, if you're advertising a kid's game or toy on TV, it's not the game or toy that's going to be the most fun to play with that succeeds on TV. It's going to be the one that comes across best in a 30-second TV commercial. And that's kind of the bane of marketing right there, is that it's not the things that are the best that get sold. It's the things that communicate the best or make the best first impression or are the most memorable, right? And I think actually a lot of the challenge that we have is that, well, you have to work with that. There's no way around it. You have no choice. You have to deal with it. But at the same time, you can't really just capitulate to the lowest common denominator. You always need to be kind of going a level above the rank and file, because that's how you do things that are enduring. And I have much more interest in businesses that last 10 or 50 years or even 100 years than I am these, you know, kind of flash in the pan success stories where they make a really great story and then whatever happened to that company, you know, like the one hit wonder. Like I believe, if I'm not mistaken, if you remember the song My Sharona by The Knack, it was like the number one song of 1979.
Yep.
And you know, those guys just completely disappeared. Like nobody's ever heard a thing about them. Does anybody even know who they were? I probably not. But you know, that was the same year that U2 put out their first album, right?
Right.
And U2 did not come out of the gates blazing with glory, but you know, they just kind of got better and better, right? And they had staying power, and you know, they have a fiercely loyal following, whether or not their new albums ever get played on the radio. And I believe they were in Chicago a few months ago playing to Soldier Field, sold out two different nights, which if you know how big Soldier Field is, like, oh my word, that's just like almost unimaginable. And so, look, it's a challenge and we have our work cut out for us, but I guess my clarion call to the people listening is, look, accept the challenge. And, you know, I think the best people in the world, the people that you really admire, they're the ones that take the hard road, not the easy one. Take the hard road. It's a better road. And I don't mean the self-punishing, self-flagellating road. I don't mean that.
Right.
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 But I just mean, you know, accept the higher challenge. I'm really looking forward to what we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, that ties into the philosophy that we have too with creating and building and protecting wealth. It's not all about the get rich quick, right? The quick hit on the Bitcoin. It's the process. It's the journey. It's the quote unquote get wealthy for sure, rather than the get rich quick. And tying it to that, you mentioned it too. It's all about the journey. And now, Perry, most of my listeners will be familiar with you. For those who are not, can you please share a little bit about your background and your journey?
So I'm probably best known for writing Ultimate Guide to Google AdWords, which is the world's best-selling book on internet advertising. And I also wrote Ultimate Guide to Facebook Advertising, which occupies that position in the Facebook world. So, I mean, if you want a handle, that's kind of the easy one to grab onto. But you know, going a little deeper, I am the engineer whose friend talked me into signing up into Amway when I was 21. Okay. Yeah. And that was like 5 or 6 years of basically pink Kool-Aid and nothing to show for it. Okay. But when I was, when my wife was pregnant with our first child, I was working as an engineer and I got laid off. I knew how to put on a suit and a tie and shake hands and tell a story and ask people questions and give a presentation, you know. So they had cleaned me up a fair bit from when I was just an engineer. It kind of took me a long time to learn that I was really to, my whole career was really going to be about having my one foot in both worlds, not really one or the other. And what that meant was that when I took that first sales job with my wife pregnant and, you know, struggling, I mean, I'm what, 26 years old, and usually when you're 26, like, you've got all this energy and you've got all this optimism, you got all this idealism, but honestly, you don't even know what you don't know. And you know, I had a lot of overconfidence in some areas. And it was, that ended up just 2 years of bologna sandwiches and ramen soup and, you know, spiraling credit card debt. And we really didn't want my wife to have to go get a job. We felt very, like, I really want her home with the kids. I think that's really important for her to just spend that time with them. But man, you know, that extracted a price, man, because I was not doing very well. And so, you know, I don't think, she probably didn't buy any clothes for like 5 years, you know, just, and we're just struggling with this. And I'm making cold calls every day. I'm going to work and I'm opening the manufacturer's directory and I'm trying to go see purchasing agents and engineers and I'm selling industrial equipment. And, you know, my boss thinks I'm too much of an engineer. Like, Perry, why don't you just sell something? You know, why do you keep trying to solve everybody's problems? Like, just go get a purchase order. Okay. You know, which, man, that just grated on me. It's like, I can't exist just to, I don't know, read How to Win Friends and Influence People, look at the fish painting on the guy's wall and talk to him about his fishing trips and slap him on the back and tell a few jokes. Like, this just drives me crazy. Like, I gotta do something more substantial than that. But, you know, really that job was just, it wasn't a very good fit, you know, but I learned a lot. And by the way, you know, look, if you're a round peg in a square hole, you need to get out and you need to go find some place where you can be a round peg in a round hole. But that said, you know, you're probably going to learn a lot of stuff. And like, when you finally get out of that square hole, you know, when you finally don't just take what you learned and shove it in a closet and try to forget about it. Like, I have to say, you know, one of the things I'm thankful for was I took everything with me. You know, every time I went through these grinding it out experiences, I learned everything I possibly could. And I tucked it away. It's like, well, this is going to come in handy somewhere. This is going in my tool belt. This is going in my repertoire. And so, you know, I remember I show up at work one day. It's in November. You know, it's getting cold outside, and I walk in the door. And ever had just this feeling like the moment you walked into a room, you knew something was wrong?
Yeah.
You know, Perry, could you come in my office and talk to me for a bit? You know, I was like, well, Perry, we're done. You know, it's like, and so I get fired. It's like just before Thanksgiving, and the company was going to go to this theater the following week, and they you know, well, you know, give us your ticket back, and we'll give it to another employee. You know, just these little painful details, right? And I go home, and I walk in the door at 9 o'clock in the morning. So an hour commute and then an hour back home, right? And my wife looks up and she like instantly, she knows, okay, you got fired. Okay, great. You know, and like she kind of had this policy. If she was going to cry, she would go cry by herself somewhere and like not lay it on me. You know, so I am just, you know, this young guy just paddling as hard as I possibly can. And I'm trying all, it's like, I really did try hard in that job. I really did try hard, but like it was just the wrong situation. And I would work on all these projects and every single one would just fall apart before it ever came together. You ever just work on these big deals and they're so awesome. It was like, man, this is just an awesome project. If we can get this to work, I mean, yeah, I'll get a nice commission check, but really the cool part about is this part and this part and this part, right?
Right.
And, but I managed to, a job that I had interviewed for the previous week, they managed to bring me in for a second interview before they ever even found out that I got fired. And then I got the job offer and I just barely managed to like, you know, maneuver my way through this without really letting on. Like, I managed to focus on all the stuff I had learned rather than all the stuff I had accomplished, which was almost nothing, you know, and like they thought it sounded good. And in this job interview, this guy says to me, he goes, okay, so Perry, what if we didn't really have the budget to fly you all over the country to talk to all these people? And I said, well, then I guess I would just talk to him on the phone or I would send him emails and, you know, I'd sit here and do whatever I could. Now, I kind of liked that question because what the question was suggesting was that I didn't have to chisel my way into companies to go get an appointment to go see them. It was like in my previous job, my job was to go get appointments with people who didn't want to see me. And with the new job, it was like, you know, as long as anybody's willing to talk to you, then just talk to them. If it's on the phone, fine. You know, if it's just trading some emails, fine. And this was in 97, by the way. And it turned out to be just about perfect. Like, okay, you don't have to pound down any doors. Furthermore, you've got the whole country. So even if finding customers across the United States is needles in haystacks, there's a big haystack, okay? And you don't need very many needles. And this actually started working. And they had a website, and engineers at the time were using the web sooner than most people. And an awful lot of engineers were researching their purchases before they would buy anything. And so, like, this was actually working, and we started generating leads, and we were doing an early version of what we now all understand to be internet marketing, lead generation, content-based marketing, marketing by problem-solving rather than marketing by talking about your fishing pole hanging on the wall, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
You're like, okay, I actually know something about this, and you have a hard time finding people who know something about this, so let's talk. And that was the whole basis of of doing business. And like maybe a month later, I got the biggest commission check I ever got. And like, it was like, oh my goodness. Like for the first time in probably a year or two, we actually made enough money to pay our bills. And it was this feeling, okay, you know that feeling when you almost have a car accident? Yeah. And you feel like this adrenaline just pumping through your body, and it has kind of the sickening, like your heart is pounding and panic, and like you just want to make the feeling go away as fast as you can. Like, oh my word, that was such a close call, right?
Right.
That was how I felt right then. It was like, man, you know, I don't know what would have happened. Would we have, I don't know, moved into that little tiny broken down house next to my wife's parents' farmhouse in Nebraska? I mean, oh my word. Like, wow, that was a close call. You know, we were so close to the edge, man. And that job started working. And what had happened 6 months before was I had wandered into the Peoria, Illinois Civic Center, and they had one of these giant success rallies. I don't know if you remember those. Like, they would get Barbara Bush or Norman Schwarzkopf and Zig Ziglar or Tony Robbins, like all these people. They would have them, and you know, it was kind of like this giant Tupperware party, I suppose. But, you know, all these guys, and they were talking about their books and their tapes. And
oh, is it like the Learning Annex almost like that?
Yeah, it was actually the Peter Lowe events, which was similar, right? But, you know, you go to this, there's a big crowd, and they're, you know, talking about success and sales and motivation. And the last person to talk that day was Dan Kennedy. And man, like Dan was better than all the other guys put together. And I was kind of a motivational junkie, and I was just hanging on every word. And he's talking about, he was the first person in sales to ever just come right out and say, you know what? Cold calling is like the worst form of drudgery ever devised. Well, I suppose it's better than being a slave building the pyramids in Egypt, but it's not like a lot better. Right. you know, I'm sure when one of these guys dies, they just, you know, like stick him his body between two bricks and use him as mortar, you know? You know, well, cold calling isn't that bad, but it's close. And he actually admitted it. He said, it's like the lowest form of work ever, and you should never do it unless you absolutely positively have no other choice. And what you should do is you should use low-cost lead generation and direct response marketing. And I liked it. And he levitated about $300 out of my wallet, which was a minor miracle because it was probably the last credit card I had any room on. And I went home with, you know, this little information kit, and I'm listening to the stuff in my car, and I go see my boss the next day, and I tell him about it, and he just looks at me like, dude, like you just bought swampland in Florida, man. Like, he was nice about it, but like, he totally did not take it seriously whatsoever. But I took the, it was like, man, I am going down, and this is like my last chance. I have to figure out how to make something work, you know? So I'm reading these manuals, and I'm reading these ads, and I'm learning about copywriting, and this is just opening up this whole world to me. Well, 6 months later, I get fired from that job, and I go into the new job, and all of a sudden, the copywriting, the lead generation, and everything, it's like nobody even had to tell me. I realized, hey, man, landing on a website, that's like opening a direct mail letter at home. And like, it's got to have a headline. It's got to grab you. It's got to talk to you about your problem. It's got to offer you some unique kind of solution. It's got to have some credibility. So if there's some problem solving tool that you can give them. So I'm getting this, right? And we're putting this out. Well, so this new little company that I worked at, I took this little like, so they had this part of the business. They were really, they were a software consulting firm that just, they just did consulting jobs, right? Right? Somebody would hire them to write software and they would write the software, you know, which is, you know, it's a glorified job is all that is. They wanted to be in the product business. And so it was this $2 million company with maybe 10 employees. And they put me in charge of the $200,000 part of their company that sold products. They had this tiny little product line. It's like, okay, Perry, you know, we can't put you on a plane and we don't have a lot of budget, but, you know, we can give you a contact database and we can give you a phone and we can give you a computer and an email. So, like, have at it. And so I just, you know, and every day I would get a few inquiries from our website. And, like, this guy wants to understand how to do this and how to solve this problem. And I would help him and we would get a purchase order. And, like, oh my word. And it was like the best form of therapy. Like, wow. You know, again, that adrenaline panic feeling, like, wow, we just averted a disaster. And then, you know, not only that, I don't have to cold call these people. I can reply to the emails and I can kind of gently work the sales process with these people. And then people would, they would ask me a question. They would go, hey, like, do you ever get to Cleveland? And I go, probably every now and then. You want me to let you know if I'm in town? They're like, yeah, I would love to have you stop in. Well, this is a first. Like, this is never happening at my old job, right?
Right.
And look, this is how sales and marketing ought to be.
Okay? Right.
If you're doing it correctly, that's kind of how it will manifest itself. Well, fast forward 4 years after I took that job, we built that $200,000 product business to be a $4 million business. We got rid of all the software consulting. We completely turned the corner with that. We raised some angel money and we developed a chip. A company came along, they wanted that chip. They bought us for $18 million. And they offered me a job, but it wasn't a particularly good job offer. And I could tell they didn't really understand what I had been doing. Furthermore, okay, if you've ever sold a company, or if you've ever been involved in a company that was being sold, one thing that happens is all the employees start posturing to the people that are buying the new the company, okay? And they, like, ordinarily, they don't really know what's going on. They don't, like, they have such a superficial idea of what really is happening. And so I just kind of refuse to play this politicking and like brown nosing and butt kissing and everything. And so they kind of gave me this mediocre job offer. And I knew they had no appreciation for the contribution that I had made. But it was right after 9/11. Okay. So, like, immediately, like, do you remember, like, I don't know about where you were working or what you were doing, but where I was working, immediately after 9/11, everything just stopped.
Stopped, yeah.
Like, nobody's buying anything. Okay, I remember going to a trade show, like, a week after 9/11, and they didn't cancel the trade show. Maybe they should have. But, like, so all these people are showing up, but they're just walking around in a daze, and I'm not sure anybody's even listening to anything, right? And no business is being done, and we're just in this silent, dark, no man's land of post 9/11, and this new company is offering me a job. My company has gotten sold. 9/11 managed to not mess up the sale of the company even, and I had an online mastermind group, which was the closest thing I had, like, to a group of advisors. It was all I could manage to cobble together at the time, okay? I didn't really belong to a community, really, but I had that. And I asked these people, I said, they're offering me a job, what should I do? And this guy says to me, he says, I've done this three times. I've been through this. He goes, take the money and run. Disappear, man. He said, your old job, the old company, the whole thing, it doesn't exist. Right. The minute they wrote the check and did the stock transfers, he goes, that company is over. He goes, three times I tried to stick around and help him understand. He goes, forget it. He goes, you need to treat this like a divorce, like she's gone and you don't care who she's dating or what she's doing or anything. It's a new life. And when he said that, it was like, oh, okay. I get that. I totally get that. And I just, now I had put so much energy and so much passion. I mean, I really did. Like, you know, most people do not put the passion and heart that they would put into an entrepreneurial venture into a job.
Yep.
But I had done that. And one of the reasons I did it was because my boss gave me stock options. Right. I mean, I think every employee, whether they realize it or not, anybody who's just an employee, they've always, in the back of their mind, they've always got one finger on the eject button. Okay? Right. At least if they're really smart. Now, there are lots of people, they think they're going to have their job forever, right? And then one day they wake up and they find out their employer has always had one finger on the eject button. Yep. Right?
Yep.
Okay? Nassim Nicholas Taleb calls that Turkmenistan, like where the turkey gets fatter and fatter and then all of a sudden they cook him for Thanksgiving dinner.
Yep.
Right? Well, I really had put myself into this job and they gave me stock options. And basically I parachuted out with a couple $100,000, which was just like the contrast to the situation I had been in when I got into that job was just night and day. Now, this didn't make me rich, okay? But it gave me runway. It gave me, I paid off my debt. I paid a whole bunch of taxes. You know, that's like a, you know, you pay like 40% taxes. But anyway, it was like a new lease in life. So I started the company that I have now. And that was in 2001. And so, wow, you know, it's been quite the journey. So here we are. And, you know, look, I just want to encourage people. You're living the story you will someday tell. And that is how I always looked at everything I was going through. I mean, okay, so, you know, the very near disaster of having to probably just sell the house and move to Nebraska and start all over again, you know, and the, you know, you borrow money from your father-in-law so that you can restructure a loan and mortgage your house, and like we did all that, right? And then, you know, growing this company, okay, this whole 4 years I worked there, I mean, it was a fascinating job and it had a lot of challenges and they gave me a lot of leeway, and what we were doing was kind of fun, but man, it was stressful. Look, anytime you're going to take a company and you're going to transform it from like a services company to a product company, and you're going to somehow make it around that bend without blowing the thing up or going bankrupt, you know, they were sweating payroll probably most weeks and most months, and there was always some kind of crisis going on, and our competitors are way bigger than we are, and you know, and there was always like there was always something.
Yeah.
Okay. And it was just stress and everything. It was problems for breakfast every day.
Yeah.
Okay. But I would tell myself, I go, okay, well, this is a crazy story. Like wait till I'm telling this story to somebody, right?
Yep.
Wait till, no, podcast didn't exist back then, but like, wait till I'm on a podcast telling this crazy story, right? What's this going to sound like? Like, oh my word, like you're like Indiana Jones, you know, leaping from one crocodile to another as they, you know, they're
exactly
chomping at.
Yeah, no, and I appreciate it. That is absolute solid gold already right there. You're living the story that you're going to tell one day. So things have changed quite a bit since you started that company. It's there's a lot of the attention spans have gotten shorter. I joke and say, you know, we have the collective attention span of a gnat these days. You're listening to Perry Marshall on the Cashflow Ninja podcast. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsors.
Life settlement investments have allowed financial and banking institutions to not only buy their equity contractually, but also diversify their capital from any economic, market, and geopolitical risk. It's been part of the $1 billion blueprint followed by institutional investors. And if you're an accredited investor, you can also now participate in this vehicle with enormous growth potential. You can watch an informational webinar presented by one of the premier organizations providing life settlement investments, Penumbra Solutions, at cashflowninja.com/life settlements. My friend Dave Zook from The Real Asset Investor says, you can be conventional or you can be wealthy. Pick one. The Real Asset Investor team creates value for investors looking for high yield returns from multifamily apartments, ATM machines, and self-storage investments. Their syndications offer attractive investment opportunities that produce strong cash flow, equity growth, huge tax incentives. They are truly passive and managed by a world-class team. To learn more about the exciting investment opportunities The Real Asset Investor offers, such as their multifamily, ATM, and self-storage syndications, please visit cashflowninja.com/real-asset-investor.
You're listening to Perry Marshall on the Cashflow Ninja podcast, and now back to our interview. So what are some of this, what's working right now as far as from the marketing side, Perry, before we jump into the 80-20, which I think is so powerful, what are some of the strategies that you see and that's working right now in standing out and still gaining attention and doing it in such a way that holds the attention spans of people out there and your ideal client or customer?
So, you know, as soon as everybody figured out what the rules were, the rules suddenly changed. So what do I mean by that? Well, it's kind of funny. You know, when I went to that Peoria, Illinois, rah-rah rally, and Dan Kennedy was speaking, what I couldn't have known at the time was that the dark ages of advertising were about to come to an end. Okay, so a little history here. So in 1918, a guy named Claude Hopkins wrote the book Scientific Advertising, and he pretty much defined direct marketing as a scientific endeavor. And like, I'm very serious about that, right? Like, you know, you're gonna run marketing like a series of science experiments, and you're gonna do A/B tests, and you're gonna track all the numbers, and well, there's a very funny thing that Claude Hopkins says at the end of his book, and he basically says, "Well, I guess we figured it all out. Like, I'm not sure what else there is for us to do besides just run our experiments." And in a way, he was kind of right. Okay, but there's something that he could not have possibly foreseen, and it was television. Okay, and it was the fact that given the technology that of the time and what was going to happen for like literally the next 50 years, that nobody was going to be really all that interested in tracking advertising, except for this little renegade band of people called direct marketers. But mostly advertising was just going to turn to this giant con job, like literally for the next 50 years. Okay. And that Claude Hopkins would just kind of have to wait, you know, many decades before anybody took him seriously. But when the internet came along, suddenly the technology was ready for Claude Hopkins. Okay. And so this is what happened. And so I climbed on board, let's say about 2 or 3 years before this just took off like a rocket. Okay. Maybe even you could say 5 years. Like, I would define the golden age of direct marketing started in 2002. And it started when Google started AdWords. Because suddenly, basically, this brought the internet out of the Wild West and into some level of civilization. It's like, okay, the English language is up for sale, and the bidding starts at 5 cents, and go. And so all of a sudden, here comes all these people. And how do you do this? Claude Hopkins, man. That's how you do it. And so direct marketing got reborn. Well, if you could just simply keep up with that, or if you were like me and you had the good fortune of having about a 5-year head start, oh my word, like the world was your oyster. Like, you couldn't hardly help but make money if you had a halfway serious product. And, you know, and so this gold rush just took off. Well, I would say that, you know, the golden age of direct marketing, it lasted, let's say, about 15 years. But here's where we're at now. Now, let's acknowledge there's a lot of people, they think they understand this stuff and they really don't. Okay. There's all kinds of charlatans and pretenders and wannabes and, you know, for sure. Okay. But, you know, the best people in the crowd, they really do know what they're doing. And if you go to any decent marketing seminar, you're going to find all kinds of people. They know how to write headlines. They know how to do Google advertising. They know how to do Facebook advertising. And they know they have some idea what a unique selling proposition is. And like, they have all these basics under their belt. And the consequence is that just knowing how to do that stuff, it's probably kind of like being a doctor, okay? Like, a doctor will always have a job, okay? There's always going to be patients. But, like, you know, doctors are not in control of their own destiny anymore. I mean, maybe they were in the 1970s or the 1980s, but they're sure not now, right? They're like working for insurance companies, okay? And I would say a lot of marketers are in a similar kind of position. And part of the problem is they understand marketing tactically, but they don't really understand it strategically. And they don't really understand business at a strategic level. They understand marketing at a tactical level. And there's just two completely different levels at which the game is played. And so you really have to go to a higher level. You know, it's sort of like that whole thing about, you know, nobody wanted a drill, they wanted a hole. You have to kind of take that sort of idea and then you have to like move it to a totally 100,000 foot level. And it's really about what kind of business are you going to really build? Because what the world really wants is the world wants businesses that kind of they game change something and they make something a lot simpler and a lot easier than it ever used to be. And that's you pretty much have to do that.
Disrupt.
And I think, yeah, you have to disrupt. I mean, that's all there is to it. And a lot of people shrink back from it. They're like, do I really have to do that? Can't I just turn the crank? And, you know, and furthermore, you know, anytime you're going to try to disrupt, you're going to have a high failure rate. And that's just how it is. And so, long answer to short question, but that's where we're at now. That's certainly where my head's at.
So let's take a look at the 80-20 principle and concept that you've shared, because I think it's so powerful for investors out there, people that are looking to try and create and build wealth, people that are running their businesses. I think this is a super powerful concept of regardless where you are in your journey.
Yeah, so I would say that most people think they understand 80-20 and they really just don't. So, I mean, I'm sure most entrepreneurs have heard somewhere what Pareto discovered, that no matter where you go, no matter what country, no matter what economic system they use, it's always the fact that 20% of the people have 80% of the money and 80% of the people have 20% of the money. I think most people have heard that, and most people have heard that 80% of your sales come from 20% of your customers, 20% of your sales come from 80% of your customers. But that's about it, okay? And it is so much deeper than that. It is probably just about the deepest thing that there is in business. And look, here's, if I might use an analogy, I've always liked things that are deceptively simple. I'm just attracted to things like that. Like,
right.
So for example, I play the drums. Now, I am not like a particularly talented drummer, but I certainly know how hard it is. Like, it looks like, okay, so you put these sticks in your hands, you know, and you bang on stuff, right?
Right.
Well, if you've ever paid attention to a really good drummer, there is so much subtlety, okay? And it is so much harder just to keep time for a band. Like, if the drummer has his act together, it'll be a tight band. If the drummer doesn't have his act together, there's nothing any of the musicians can do to fix it, right? There's so much subtlety. You could spend a whole lifetime just learning how to lay down a really good groove, right?
Right.
Well, 80-20 is like that. Okay. It's the simple thing that is so deep. So let me try to convey a couple of the subtleties of it. Okay. The first one is that it's not just this business economics rule of thumb. It's a deep universal truth and it's everywhere. Like, it is everywhere.
Yep.
Okay. So for example, if you go to the beach and you scoop sand into your hand, the size of the sand grains in your hand is always 80-20. So 20% of the sand grains are 80% of the rock, and 80% of the sand grains are 20% of the rock. Okay. And it's true of the traffic on the streets in your town, and it's true of the size of the craters on your, in the moon, and rabbit populations, like anything. It's all 80-20, okay? Because 80-20 is a universal principle of unequal cause and effect. And furthermore, there's an 80-20 inside every 80-20. So if you open the folder on your computer and you look at the files, 20% of the files take 80% of the hard drive space, but 20% of the 20% take 80% of the 80%, and 20 of the 20 of the 20 take 80 of the 80 of the 80, and 20 of the 20 of the 20 of the 20 take 80 of the 80 of the 80 of the 80. So now, I'm not trying to confuse anybody, but just to kind of show you how this breaks down, what it means is 20% of the customers write 80% of the checks. 4% of the customers write 64% of the checks. 1% of the customer write 50% of the checks. 0.2% of your customers write 40% of your checks. So there's these huge inequalities, huge, huge. And you can't change this. So most people are trained to fight it. No, you have to work with it. And when you start working with 80-20 instead of fighting 80-20, then you go from the should-be world to the is world, and the world starts cooperating with you. Okay, so if you hire 10 salespeople, I don't care where you find them. I don't care how you hire them. I don't care what you do. Here's what's going to happen. You hire 10 salespeople, two of them will outsell the other eight. Guaranteed to happen. Guaranteed. Okay. Now, what most people will try to do is they'll try to fix the eight. They're like, okay, so you two, good for you. Pat you on the back. You just keep doing what you're doing. Okay, now let's try to fix these eight people. No. No. Like, even probably the whole setup of how even they got hired is flawed. Because you hired them, they're like, well, you know, you get a 401k and you get benefits and, you know, and you get this and you get that. And after 5 years, you know, get this. And after 20 years, you get a gold watch. Like, you hire salespeople, you have no business having any kind of conversation like that until they've actually proven that they can do this, right?
Right.
Like, what you should do is you should hire them. You say, okay, so here's how this works. You know, you look good. You smell good. I look good. I smell good. You know, this job may not be a fit for you. This company may not be a fit. You may not be a fit for us. And you know what? There's no shame if this thing doesn't work out. So here's what we're going to do. We're just going to like do a 15-day audition. We're going to do a 30-day audition, or maybe 1 day or 2 days. Right. And you know what? We're just going to put you on the phones, you know, and if it works, great. Then you'll go through your trial period and then you'll eventually become a real employee, you know? And if it doesn't work out, you know, we'll just write you a check and we'll send you on your way. And like, you can just try some other place. Right. And you just take the pressure off. And you don't interview them. You know, it's like, if you were going to hire a bass player, would you A, sit down for an hour? They sit at your desk and they talk about Geddy Lee, and then they go to the next desk and they talk about Paul McCartney, and then they go to the next desk and they talk about Sting, and then they go to the next desk and they talk about Victor Wooten, right? No. And right,
just play the bass. Yeah.
Okay. Hiring anybody to do anything should be like hiring a bass player or hiring somebody to do Shakespeare. Like, okay, show me what you can do. Like whatever you do, like pick up the phone, open a Google AdWords account, go negotiate a deal. Like, just show us what you can do. Right. That's
right.
Audition, not interview. But then getting back to, we got the eight people and the two people. So, okay. So you get rid of the eight people as fast as you can. Then you have the two people. Well, so one of them's probably pretty good and one of them's amazingly good. So here's what you do. Like with the amazingly good one, here's what most companies do. They go, all right, so you need to turn in your expense reports every 2 weeks, and they need all the receipts stapled to them, and we need everything, and you know, and blah blah, like, and they burden them with like all of this bureaucracy, right? You know, and the guy's like trying to book his plane flights, the guy's trying to deal with his rental cars, and the guy's, you know, and they're like, oh, you know, and by the way, you need to come to all these meetings, and you know, and it's like, no, like, just, you know, find some lady in accounting to handle all that stuff for him, and find somebody else to book his plane flights, and find somebody else to do his rental cars, and just get the guy in front of the customers. Like, just, you know, just put him out there, right? And, you know, and then the next thing that's going to happen is the guy's going to like blow sales records out of the ceiling, you know, and then like 8 months later, he's making more money than the CEO, and then the CEO is angry, and then they start cutting his commissions and cutting his territory because nobody gets to make more money than the CEO. You know, 80-20 says, if you have this like one crazy superstar that can sell ice to Eskimos and he can, you know, then you just like, just do whatever it takes to keep him, deal with his dysfunctions, you know, and like get the guy out there selling stuff, right? Because the best salespeople and the best marketers, they're always eccentric. They're always weird. They're always prima donnas. They always have these crazy personalities. I heard about a study somebody did where they took the very best salespeople at this big corporation, and they took all of their resumes and CVs and they disguised them and they resubmitted them to HR. And HR wouldn't hire a single one of them.
No, that does not surprise. And it ties into the value of your time as well, because that's how you, as you mentioned, increase production, make more money by focusing on that 20 instead of the 80 that's not getting all the results. So, I mean, we can apply that to every area within our business, within our investments. So it's so powerful, and how you break it down, there's just so much to it than just the surface level. Now, Perry, a core message in our show is to leave our families, communities, and the world better by passing down a mindset, values, and principles to future generations, not just money. So if you cannot pass on any money to future generations, and we're only allowed to pass on three principles to them to build wealth and achieve happiness and success, what would they be?
Okay, so I'll give you like a kind of a I'll give you a strategic one first, and then I'll give you two more like life lesson level ones. So one of them is STAR principle. Okay, STAR principle is what happens when you apply 80-20 to what business should I be in? What product should I sell in the first place? What job should I take? What consulting gig should I go after? Okay. And the answer to all those questions, like, you could be 23 years old, graduating from college. This applies to you. Okay. You could be coming off of a success story, and what should my next company that I start be? It still applies. It could be buying an apartment complex or real estate. STAR principle applies all of the above. And here's what it is. In any business, you want to be number one in a market growing 10% or more. You don't want to be number two. You don't want to be number three. You don't want to be number four. You want to be number one. And you only want to be in growing markets. You don't want to be in flat markets. You don't want to be in shrinking markets. Okay, and if you're in a growing market but you're not number one, then you need to find a part of the market that nobody's addressing and make yourself number one of a sub niche. Okay, so like if you're in a growing city and there's lots of apartment buildings but there's no medical building, then you don't go buy an apartment building, you create a medical building. And you be the number one medical building in town. Okay. Now, I don't have time to go any further than that. There's a book by Richard Koch called STAR Principle that goes very deep. And this is what I just told you, by the way. This is one of the most powerful things ever. And ignore it at your peril. Okay. Now, I'll give you two other things. You should read something written before Gutenberg every day. All right. So you're saying, like, give me something to pass on to my kids. It's not money.
Right.
Okay. So we live in this social media saturated world where I can get on Twitter or Instagram, and in 10 seconds, I can say, I had sushi for lunch today. Okay.
All right.
All right, so I want you to contrast something. I want you to contrast to a world where there's no printing press, there's no computers. Everything that's important has to get hand copied by scribes. Okay, so nobody's going to hand copy, I had sushi for lunch today. Right?
Right.
Okay, and furthermore, you know, all these scrolls, that get hand copied laboriously by these scribes, you know, oh, you know, every 10 or 50 or 100 years, somebody's going to come and they're going to sack Rome, or they're going to burn the Library of Alexandria, or they're going to drag the Jews into captivity, or, you know, Greece is going to come tumbling down. Okay, so that being the case, if it's 2,300 years old and we still have it, it's really, really good. Okay? You should read something written before Gutenberg every day. And what it will do is, first off, it's like a total litmus test for what's important in life and what's not. Okay? Because all that literature deals with the core human issues. You know, wives and families and mistresses and disagreements and politics and governments and disputes and relatives and kids and, you know, death and money and disease and pain and suffering and poetry, okay? And this is so different from the 20th century RPM, okay? Yeah. I'm telling you, if you can get to pre-Gutenberg RPM, if you can start your day that way, it's going to feel really weird to your brain. It's going to feel really uncomfortable. But if you can get yourself in that space every day, you will see things that nobody else around you is seeing. You will have an inherent advantage in every situation you walk into, because you will have depth. I mean, if there's any problem we have in the 21st century, it's a mile wide and an inch deep. Everybody's just so shallow, okay? And in fact, what you see now, you know, there's this phenomenon that's starting to happen, and a recent label that's kind of got stuck on it is the intellectual dark web. You know, and it's people like Joe Rogan and Jordan Peterson and a bunch of different, you know, podcasters and YouTubers, and it's 3-hour interviews with people that really, really know something, you know, and there's this percentage of people out there, they're so tired of the surface level that when they find some other people that they can intellectually, you know, spar with and engage with, like, they'll just listen to it for hours. I'm seeing this with my kids. I'm seeing this with my friends. And like, they're almost not even paying any attention to the main media outlets anymore. They're just
right.
Okay. So, but I would say that this is a reflection of, I'm giving you a different version of kind of the same thing. Okay. It's depth, right? It's real, like wrestling with the real smart guys, not the talking heads. Right. And the other thing is really engage on a spiritual level. And, you know, we live in this very materialistic culture, and like, I'm not against the material things that we have. I mean, I'm fine with all that, but like, look, there's more to life than like download speed. You know what I'm saying? And if you go to perrymarshall.com/spirituality, you can sign up for an email series and I'll take you down my rabbit hole. But like, I see a lot of spiritual hunger out there. I see a lot of people going, man, you know, there's gotta be more to life than just hustling, you know? And so those would be my three things.
Thank you so much for sharing them, Perry. Perry, this has been a phenomenal. Thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your journey and your knowledge and providing so much value for my listeners. It's been a fantastic experience. Where can my listeners follow you? Where can they reach out to you? Where can they learn more and stay informed of all of the projects that you're involved with?
If you go to perrymarshall.com, you'll find links to the social medias and stuff. I would encourage you, check out my book, 80-20 Sales and Marketing, and sign. I've got an email course called the 30-Day Street MBA, and I think it'll really help you. You know, sign up on my email list. You will find much more depth than what you normally get in most people's emails. I've got people that have now been, they've been reading my emails every day for 15 years. Give that a try. And in 80/20 Sales and Marketing, it's on my website, it's on Amazon, it's on Audible, it's on Kindle, however you like to consume books. And yeah, hey, MC, it's been great having you and being a guest on your show. And I hope I gave some people something that will stick with them for a long time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much again.
Are you having a hard time finding great investment properties? Unfortunately, the best deals are rarely found locally. Successful investing begins with the right properties in the right markets. Norada Real Estate provides everything you need to invest in the best deals across the United States. Our simple proven system will help you create real wealth and passive monthly cash flow. Learn how to find the best deals by downloading your free copy of The Ultimate Guide to Passive Real Estate Investing at noradarealestate.com. That's noradarealestate.com.
Thank you for joining me again on the Cashflow Ninja. Thank you for all your support. You rock. If you like what you hear and appreciate what we're trying to build here at the Cashflow Ninja, please subscribe, rate, and review our show on iTunes and share our show with family, friends, and your network. If you're not a subscriber to our newsletter, you can sign up for our newsletter at cashflowninja.com or text Cashflow Ninja to 44222. I'm also posting daily videos on Facebook and YouTube, and will live stream weekly starting May 2018. To make sure you don't miss any of the live streams, please like and subscribe to my Facebook and YouTube platforms. I'm also dropping content on Instagram daily. Be sure to follow us on Instagram to get in on the action. I want to thank you for spending your most precious resource with me today, your time. That's our show for today. Until next time, live a life of passion and purpose on your terms. This presentation is for educational and informational purposes only. The information being presented and considered does not consider your particular financial objectives or situation, and it does not make personalized recommendations. This material is not intended to replace the advice of a qualified tax and legal advisor or other qualified professionals, and you should not use the information in place of a customized consultation with a licensed professional regarding your specific personal financial objectives, situation, and needs. We believe the information provided is reliable, but we do not guarantee its accuracy, timeliness, or completeness.